Welcome back to Mental Health Integration Week 4, Part 1. I'm excited you're back. In this week, we are going to start doing something quite a bit different. We are going to go through a case study of Saul. Then we're going to go through a case study of David. And then we're going to talk about some other biblical characters as well. But these two stories, they're going to dictate a lot of what we talk about in this section, because it's the first two kings of Israel, the first two kings who suffer with depression, and their stories are juxtaposed right up against each other and are so incredibly different. They're also two of my favorite characters in the Bible. I absolutely adore the story of Saul because it reverberates with so much of my own struggles that I've experienced. And I just love how that's juxtaposed against David, and how, though they go through some similar things in some ways, it's so different. A couple notes before we get too far into this. As your homework, you had to do a reading, and I hope you've done it so far, that talked about the diagnosis of Saul. And it's from a psychiatrist who looks back and looks at Saul's symptoms and some of the things that he goes through and says, I think this would be Saul's diagnosis. I am not going to spend a lot of time discussing that in this because, as we talked about at the very beginning, symptoms are like the shadow of a person, and it's really hard from symptoms to draw conclusions on exactly what their diagnosis would be more than 2,000 years after the fact. However, there's some interesting debate and conversation about that, and in some ways it can be really helpful for people to be able to embrace, this is my own diagnosis, and there's people that understand me in the Bible, and look at this, there's psychiatrists making diagnosis of these people who've been dead for 2,500 years, but they were just like me, and they're in my Bible, and that's a big deal. So I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just not something that, one, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm not comfortable doing, and two, that it's really easy to miss some of the points of the story if we're, taking little tiny pieces out of a person's story to try and figure out what their diagnosis is. That's not the purpose of our time here, so we're just not going to discuss it a whole lot. That said, I'm excited to jump into these two stories of David, but first of Saul, the first king of Israel. So we are going to kick this off with Saul right here. There was a Benjamite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorath, the son of Aphiah of Benjamin. Kish had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel. He was a head taller than anyone else. Now the donkeys belonging to Saul's father Kish were lost, and Kish said to his son Saul, "Take one of the servants with you and go look for the donkeys." So he passed through the hill country of Ephraim and through the area around Shalisha, but they did not find them. They went on to the director of Shalim, but the donkeys were not there. He passed through the territory of Benjamin, but they did not find them. When they reached the district of Zuph, Saul said to the servant who was with him, "Come, let's go back, or my father will stop thinking about the donkeys and start worrying about us." But the servant replied, "Look, in this town there's a man of God. He is highly respected, and everything he says comes true. Let's go there now. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take." Saul said to his servant, "If we go, what can we give the man? The food in our sacks is gone. We have no gift to take the man of God. What do we have?" The servant answered him again. "Look," he said, "I have a quarter of a shekel of silver. I will give it to the man of God so that he will tell us which way to take." Formerly in Israel, if someone wants to inquire of God, they would say, "Come, let us go to the seer," because the prophet of today used to be called a seer. "Good," Saul said to his servant. "Come, let's go." So they set out for a town where the man of God was. So this is the dramatic setup to this story. Saul is this incredibly dashing man. He's a head taller than everyone else in the area. He is the most handsome guy around. Like if David Beckham was taller, apparently. I don't know. But he is everything that you would hope for in a guy. And his father has lost his donkeys. And Saul is in hot pursuit. He is trying to find these donkeys, and he is absolutely dumbfounded. No way he knows where they're at. So they're trying to find out, where are these donkeys? And the only thing they can think of is, well, there's a prophet here. So maybe he can ask God where the donkeys are, because we don't have a clue. And that's our setup for this story. Saul has no inclination that anything is changing in his life. The only thing he knows is he's out looking for donkeys, and he can't find them. And this is where we continue. As they were going up the hill to the town, they met some young women coming out to draw water. And they asked them, "Is the seer here?" "He is," they answered. "He's ahead of you. Hurry now. He has just come to our town today, for the people have a sacrifice at the high place. As soon as you enter the town, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. The people will not begin eating until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterward, those who are invited will eat. Go up now. You should find him about this time." They went up to the town, and as they were entering it, there was Samuel, coming towards them on his way up to the high place. "Now the day before Saul came, the Lord revealed to Samuel, 'About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over my people Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me.' When Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him, 'This is the man I spoke to you about. He will govern my people.'" So we have Saul, and we have Samuel, and the meeting is on. God is in the midst of this. He is saying to Samuel, "This is the guy. You're going to anoint him. He's going to lead the people." But there is no interest at all from Saul at this point that he wants to be king. There's no ambition to be king. There is just a kid looking for donkeys. And he's still just looking for donkeys. So we continue. Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked, "Would you please tell me where the seer's house is?" "I am the seer," Samuel replied. "Go up ahead of me to the high place, for today you are to eat with me. And in the morning I will send you on your way and will tell you all that is in your heart. As for the donkeys that you lost 3 days ago, do not worry about them. They have been found. And to whom is all of the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and your whole family line?" Saul answered, "But am I not a Benjamite, from the smallest tribe in Israel? And is not my clan the least of all the clans of the tribe of Benjamin? Why do you say such a thing to me?" So immediately, Saul has this reaction. Samuel says, "Well, you were a kid who's looking for donkeys, but now the desires of the entire nation of Israel, they're set on you and on your family line." Saul knows what this means. Saul knows that Israel wants a king. Bad. They're saying to the rest, to God, that the rest of the nations around us, they all have kings. They're all doing great. We really want this king thing. And God is saying, maybe. And then he is now giving them the desire of their own heart. And he's giving it to them in the strongest, most handsome man in all Israel. But there's one problem. The dude who God is giving the job doesn't want the job. Saul was interested in chasing donkeys. He is not interested in being king. And his answer reflects that. "Am I not from the smallest of the tribes of Israel, from Benjamin? And is my clan not the smallest of Benjamin? Who am I that you should give this to me? This is supposed to be an honor that comes to the greatest of the great. Why would you give it to somebody in the smallest house, in the smallest clan? It just doesn't make sense." So, from the very beginning, we have this person who's about to be thrust into a position of power, who feels so unworthy of that position of power, so insecure in that position of power, and he's about to be put as head of Israel from a position that he doesn't think he's worthy of. This is going to get interesting. Continue. Then Samuel brought Saul and his servant into the hall and seated them at the head of those who were invited, about 30 in number. Samuel said to the cook, "Bring the piece of meat I gave you, the one I told you to lay aside." So the cook took up the thigh with what was on it and set it in front of Saul. Samuel said, "Here is what has been kept for you. Eat, because it was set aside for you for this occasion, from the time I said, 'I have invited guests.'" And Saul dined with Samuel that day. After they came down from the high place to the town, Samuel talked with Saul on the roof of his house. There rose about daybreak, and Samuel called to Saul on the roof, "Get ready, and I will send you on your way." When Saul got ready, he and Samuel went outside together. As they were going down to the edge of town, Samuel said to Saul, "Tell the servant to go on ahead of us." And the servant did so. "But you stay here for a while, so that I may give you a message from God." And here we have it. This is going to be the new king. The man who is running for donkeys, who just sent his servant away so that Samuel could give him some incredibly powerful news. Then Samuel took a flask of oil and poured it on Saul's head and kissed him, saying, "Has not the Lord anointed you ruler over his inheritance? When you leave me today, you will meet two men near Rachel's tomb at Zelzah on the border of Benjamin. They will say to you, 'The donkeys you set out to look for have been found. And now your father has stopped thinking about them and is worried about you. He is asking, what shall I do about my son?' Then you will go on from there until you reach the great tree of Tabor. Three men going up to worship God at Bethel will meet you there. One will be carrying three young goats, another three loaves of bread, and another a skin of wine. They will greet you and offer you the two loaves of bread, which you will accept from them." Saul is not only promised that he will be the next king, but now he has tasks as the next king that he must perform in order to step into this new place. This is complete disorientation. He was supposed to be chasing donkeys. Now, all of a sudden, he is being anointed king, and now he's going with three prophets? This is just unfathomable. "After that, you will go to Gibeah of God, where there is a Philistine outpost. As you approach the town, you will meet a procession of prophets coming down from the high place with lyres, timbrels, pipes, and harps being played before them, and they will be prophesying. The Spirit of the Lord will come powerfully upon you, and you will prophesy with them, and you will be changed into a different person. Once these signs are fulfilled, do whatever your hand finds you to do, for God is with you. Go down ahead of me to Gilgal. I will surely come down to you to sacrifice burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. But you must wait 7 days until I come to you and tell you what you are to do." In one day, Saul is thrust into a brand new life and told he is going to be a brand new person, and the Spirit of the Lord is to come upon him. And I can imagine Saul is feeling so much pent-up anxiety about this. I am supposed to be least in the kingdom. My family is the least. My clan is the least. And now I'm going to be a different... There's so much confusion and so much disorientation that he can't even find his feet. He can't find where he's supposed to go or what he's supposed to do next. And the narrative just continues plowing forward upon Saul. As Saul turned to leave Samuel, God changed Saul's heart, and all these gifts were fulfilled that day. When he and his servant arrived at Gibeah, a procession of prophets met him. The Spirit of God came powerfully upon him, and he joined in their prophesying. When all those who had formerly known him saw him prophesying with the prophets, they asked each other, "What is this that has happened to the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets?" A man who lived there answered, "And who is their father?" So it became a saying, "Is Saul also among the prophets?" As after Saul stopped prophesying, he went to the high place. Now Saul's uncle asked him and his servant, "Where have you been?" "Looking for the donkeys," he said. "But when we saw they were not to be found, we went to Samuel." Saul's uncle said, "Tell me what Samuel said to you." Saul replied, "He assured us that the donkeys had been found, but he did not tell his uncle what Samuel had said about the kingship." Continuing, Samuel summoned the people of Israel to the Lord at Mizpah and said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought Israel up out of Egypt and delivered you from the power of Egypt and all the kingdoms that oppressed you. But you have now rejected your God who saves you out of all your disasters and calamities. And you have said, 'Now appoint a king over us.' So now, present yourselves before the Lord by tribes and clans." When Samuel had all Israel come forward by tribes, the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. Then he brought forward the tribe of Benjamin, clan by clan, and Machri's clan was taken. Finally, Saul, son of Kish, was taken, and when they looked for him, he was not to be found. And they inquired further of the Lord, "Has the man come here yet?" And the Lord replied, "Yes, he has hidden himself among the supplies." They look to take lots, and Saul knows what's happening. He knows he's about to be named the king. He knows that everyone is gathered, that everyone has come together. This is the public ceremony. He's going to be picked, and then he is going to be anointed as the king. So what does he do? He hides among the supplies. In some translations, it says he hides among the baggage, literally hiding in the suitcases and in the bags that people carried, right? He's just piled himself in there to make sure that no one else finds him. He's trying to make sure that no one can actually anoint him because he's not available. "Yes, I went to the ceremony, but I didn't get anointed king because I didn't want to be king." You can see the insecurity that rises up in Saul. His lack of confidence. Even after he's sat with the prophets and prophesied, even after he has walked through and been anointed by Samuel himself, he still doesn't think this is his space. And so all of the expectation, the weight of the expectation of the kingdom, starts to rest on Saul. And he can't take it. And you can see it even before his ordination, that he's already struggling with all of it. They ran and brought him out, and as he stood among the people, he was a head taller than any of the others. Samuel said to the people, "Do you see the man the Lord has chosen? There is no one like him among all the people." Then the people shouted, "Long live the king!" Samuel explained to the people the rights and duties of kingship. He wrote them down on a scroll and deposited it before the Lord. Then Samuel dismissed the people to go to their own homes. Saul went to his home in Gibeah, accompanied by valiant men whose hearts God had touched. But some scoundrels said, "How can this fellow save us?" They despised him and brought him no gifts. But Saul kept silent. Even if he didn't want it, Saul ends up being anointed, because God told people that he was hiding in the luggage. And this begins his kinship, this feeling of inferiority and this feeling of not being good enough that is just encompassing Saul throughout his entire reign of Israel, that he can't possibly be the guy. And because of that, when the darkness starts to fall on Saul, when he starts to doubt what's going on, when he starts to feel those depressions and things, it's all couched in these feelings of insecurity. This feeling of, how could I ever be good enough? How could I be in the position that I'm in? This is too heavy and too big for me. So the narrative continues. This is chapter 16. We've skipped ahead. Now the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord tormented him. Saul's attendant said to him, "See, an evil spirit from God is tormenting you.
Let our Lord command his servants here to search for someone who can play the lyre. He will play when the evil spirit from God comes upon you, and you will feel better. So Saul said to his attendants, "Find someone who plays well and bring him to me." One of the servants answered, "I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is fine looking. And the Lord is with him." David came to Saul and entered his service. Saul liked him very much, and David became one of his armor bearers. Then Saul sent word to Jesse, saying, "Allow David to remain in my service, for I am pleased with him." Whenever the Spirit of God came on Saul, David would take up his lyre and play. The relief would come to Saul. He would feel better, and an evil spirit would leave him. With these feelings of insecurity, now he's also dealing with the fact that the Spirit of God has departed. It's actually already joining David at this point. And David's ordination that he is going to end up being king, it's happening. But David isn't grabbing the power. He's not grabbing the throne. He hasn't been called to lead right now. And in fact, Saul is already struggling with being tortured mentally. Now, commentators have given all sorts of ideas about what could be going on. Is this actually an evil spirit? Is this depression? Is this anxiety? Is this something else? I can say with confidence I have no idea. But what we do know is that it was not fun. And that the music from David helped. So whatever going on with Saul, now we have mental anguish paired with insecurity. And he's still king. And he's still going to be king for a while. Saul took his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell him what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it, and you were glad. Why would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" We see Saul is already starting to lose it. He's developed this jealousy for David. This is when the people start chanting, "Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands." David is moving up the ranks in Israel because he has killed the Philistine. He's killed Goliath. And now this jealousy is driving Saul. So now we have insecurity and mental anguish. And on top of that, we also have this jealousy. Because Saul doesn't want his own son to be the one who's not ruling. He wants Jonathan to rule, not David. He doesn't want his kingdom to pass by. This is something he never felt worthy of in the first place. And now his depression is spiraling. And his paranoia is spiraling. Because his anxiety about his own kingdom is starting to get out of control. And it continues. Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had mourned for him and buried him in his own town of Ramah. Saul had expelled the Mediums and Spiritists from the land. The Philistines assembled and came up and set up camp at Shunem. When Saul gathered all Israel and set up camp at Gilboa, when Saul saw the Philistine army, he was afraid. Terror filled his heart. He inquired of the Lord, but the Lord did not answer him by dreams or Urim, or prophets. Saul said to his attendants, "Find me a woman who is a medium, so I may go inquire of her." "There's one in Endor," they said. So Saul disguised himself, putting on other clothes, and at night, he and two men went to the woman. "Consult a spirit for me," he said, "and bring up for me the one that I name." Saul is desperate at this point. He desperately wants to know what is going to happen. This anxiety is spiraling. This depression is spiraling. And he desperately wants to be in control after his whole life feeling like he was a little bit out of control. Even when his position dictated that he had all the power and control a person could want. Saul is now trying to find a spirit medium so that they can call Samuel. And so they can hear what the will of God is. This is after Saul went to battle and actually did sacrifices before Samuel could get there because Saul was so insecure about winning the battle without checking all the boxes to make sure everything was right. He's so concerned with making sure that everything is checked off that he's not actually following what God says. Instead, he's just making sure all the boxes are checked because anxiety is dictating his next step. And that's actually, in some ways, how Saul dies. Saul goes to battle. He is mortally wounded. He's shot with an arrow. And knowing that he is mortally wounded, he looks at his armor bearer and says, "Run me through." The armor bearer refuses. And Saul actually falls on his sword and kills himself. Now, he was mortally wounded, so we can't say that Saul was depressed and died by suicide. But we can see that this feeling, this insecurity, this knowing that something is going to go wrong, it drives him even to his death. And we also know that Saul didn't have the life that the king could have had. Everything started right on the outside. He was handsome. He was tall. He was the man Israel wanted, at least for the most part. He started with the prophets. He prophesied. He heard God's voice. God's spirit was with him. But then we know that this anxiety, this constant fretting, this constant fearing, this constant worrying about whether or not he was good enough, God ends up leaving. God's spirit is gone. And then his insecurity consumes him to the point where he is chasing after spirit mediums even after he has eliminated them from all Israel because he just wants to know that he is going to be okay. Now, what is it that makes Saul a case for mental health? We see this depression, and almost universally, if you talk about commentators, they will note that Saul is depressed at points. We see this anxiety and this insecurity. We see all of these things that are actually dictating Saul's actions instead of Saul dictating his actions. And we see how they just destroy him over the course of his life and actually end his own line. Because Jonathan never sees the kingship. The next king is David, who Saul desperately tried to avoid being king instead of his son, Jonathan. And David is where we're going to pick up the next time as he fights his own depressions. But somehow everything looks different and somehow everything has changed in just a few years under a different person. We'll see you then.